ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय So in the Bhagavatam then it's being brought out that the three elements of the situation of activity, the need to be gained by the activity, and the activity itself, right? Means everything functions on this. Anything you do has these three aspects. So then, now, so the perfection is all those three are connected to Krishna. Whatever situation you're in, the elements in that situation, all relationships that you have, they're all connected to Krishna. Right? The desire to operate those relationships and those things in the situation is you want to please Krishna. The goal that you will get from operating it, you want to offer to Krishna. So therefore, the endeavor itself becomes for Krishna. Does that make sense? Right? So that is how you say the fundamental science of Sambandhavidaya Prayojana. So all throughout you'll see that here in the introduction, these three aspects are there. Later in the second canto, when we hit the four verses of Chaturshloki, you'll see this again brought out. It's all through the whole literature. It's actually how it operates. So, but of these three, it always should be remembered, which is different than how we function, that we think, is the activity itself is the most important, right? Not the goal. Does that make sense? Because if we look at it, this is the interesting thing, is that you have two ways to approach Sambandhavidaya Prayojana. One is by logic. Sambandha is relationship. Avideya, operating that relationship or working within that relationship. Prayojana, the result of that relationship. Right? That's very logical, very straightforward. Then, but in actuality, that's how we study it. Right? That's the intellect. That's how we study it. But in actuality, how we apply that is Sambandha Prayojana Avideya. Right? Because nobody does anything unless they see the goal they're going to get out of it. So a relationship is there. There's something you would like to gain from that relationship. Only then will you act. Right? And if you think about it, it's the activity that is more, creates more impression on the mind. Because the second one is how the mind works. So as far as rasa goes, it's Sambandha Prayojana Avideya. So actually, then, the goal is there, because that's just the way things operate. But actually we're trying to get the experience of the activity. Right? Nectar devotion, this will be called anubhava. Right? It means anubhava means the experience gained while performing the devotional service. Does that make sense? Right? Because an activity is being done to get some result. Okay, you go get some water so that Krishna can take his bath. So you're getting the water and the result is then you have water for the bath. But that's secondary to the devotion that is expressed through getting that water for the bath. You know what I'm saying? In other words, this study is to understand these subtleties of devotional service. Right? Means we hear so much about the different activities of devotional service. So now we want to actually apply them in our life. And one of the symptoms of advancement is fearlessness. We always hear this term fearless. One should become fearless, right? So that doesn't mean you're there ready to stand up, you know, while tons of people, you know, come raging at you with sticks and this and that, but you're standing there for protect Krishna's temple. That's there. But what it means is you're not afraid to acknowledge I am servant of Krishna and Krishna's God and I'm not. That takes an inner strength. Right? Because actually if we look at it, we're not so willing to accept that. Right? Because we see in many decisions we make in our life that it's our need is more important than Krishna's. That's because we still think we are the Purusha, we're the male. Right? But we're not. We're the enjoyed, we're the female. Right? We're Shakti, we're energy. Yeah? So it's just something we have to be able to face, and be able to face that, that's fearless. That makes us fixed in devotional service. That situates us on nishta. That makes us a madhyam bhakta. Right? So these things are all synonymous. Being able to look, contemplate actually our position in devotional service and how to improve it. Right? Being fixed in devotional service, being a madhyama, being fearless. These are the different terms for the same thing. Right? So Bhagavatam is trying, Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam are starting that this is where you are acting from. Right? Here's something very interesting. We all will think, we all understand, okay, you have the Uttam Bhaktas, right? But for preaching, they come down to the Madhyama level. Right? We've heard this how many times? Right? We don't even think twice about this one. Okay. So that means the Uttama has to act as a Madhyama. Because it's a preaching movement. Why doesn't it say the Uttama comes as a Kanista? No, he comes as a Madhyama. He claims he's a Kanista, but he thinks and acts like a Madhyama. Right? Okay, so that half we've thought about. Now, this other half, maybe we've thought about, maybe we haven't. That if you're a neophyte, you're still under the same obligation. You're still required to think and act like a Madhyama. Because you're in a preaching movement. Right? You may say, well, that's external. Well, so is it for an Uttam Bhakta. Because the Madhyama means the activity. Right? If you look at Sambandha Abhideya Prayojana, the neophyte is still trying to establish his relationship. So that's Sambandha. The Madhyama is actively, actually fully involved because he's on Nishta platform. Right? So he's always involved. He's not sometimes, sometimes not. And the Uttama is tasting love of God. Right? So that's Prayojana. That's why the Madhyama is more important. Right? Does that make sense? Because tasting love of God is important. It's what one does, but it's passive. Right? Isn't it? You think about it. You have affection for somebody. And there's very strong affection for somebody. Do you just sit there and just enjoy the mellows of that affection? Bathe in the waves of that affection? Or do you do something? You buy them something, say something, cook something for them, do something for them. Right? It's simultaneous. When those feelings come up, you want to do something. Yes or no? Okay. I mean, of course, we're going on the principle that everybody's experienced some affection for somebody. If you haven't, then don't worry about it. Does this make some sense? So, this is a very subtle point, because we always talk about love of God because we are result-oriented. But the point is that love of God has to be expressed. And that's expressed through service. You have a relationship with Godhead. That's nice. But how do you express that? Through service. So therefore, it always comes back to Abhideya. Right? That's why, if you've ever thought about it, why is Govindaji the prominent deity and not Gopinath? Why is it Rupa Goswami is the Acharya and not Madhu Pandit? Right? Because Abhideya, or performance of service, is actually what pleases Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? One may ask, why? Because that feeling and all that is great. You know, that moments of that flash of affection between, you know, husband and wife, or parent and child, or friend and friend, or, you know, whatever may be that moments, are what the conditioned soul lives for. Right? So, well, those are great. But as we said, when they come, one does something about it. Right? And that's just, we just get a flash. Now you imagine the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is Atmarama. He and his energies are non-different. He is sitting there absorbed in his Atmaramaness. That means whatever is the flavors of just all that happening at once, constantly, that's already going on. You understand? Means Atmarama means you're self-satisfied. That means these feelings of satisfaction and everything are already there. But they're feelings. So what does he do? He wants to express those feelings. So therefore he expands the creation. You understand? Therefore, the expansion, the operating of the universe like this, that's what's important. It's the ability to interact with devotees. So we see from this, where it's saying yesterday, it is being brought back to the lotus feet of the Lord are the cause of everything, but the lotus feet of the Lord means the devotees. Everything that goes on is through the devotees. Even in the creation, it says he creates, he maintains, he destroys. But when he creates, if we know the Purusha Shukta, then it's Krishna's there as Garbhodakshaya Vishnu with the Sauris, right? With the original, you know, demigods. This is before creation, before Brahma. They perform the sacrifice. Krishna doesn't perform the sacrifice, they perform it. So Krishna's pastime happens because of the devotees. So he's expanded. So everything, it's all about the devotees. Right? So that's what's the real Maya. We think it's all about being God. But God, he's already God. And he wants to taste what it is interacting with devotees. So it's all about the God, it's all about the devotee. Right? Does that make sense? And for us, it's also all about the devotee. Because the devotee, they love God like that. And we assist those devotees. Does that make sense? So we're just trying to bring around the thing that it's devotional service, and devotional service in the association of devotees. That's what all our philosophy is trying to say. Right? We chant Hare Krishna, but not alone. In the association of devotees, we hear Srimad Bhagavatam. Sankirtan means chanting with devotees. Right? Then hearing Bhagavatam with devotees. Right? Worshipping the deity. In third canto, it's mentioned by Kapila Dev that you worship the deity, great, but if you don't respect and interact nicely with the devotees, Krishna is not that pleased by our deity worship. Right? Because the deity, for him, it's important to the devotees. So if we really love the deity, that means we have to love the devotees. You know, Prabhupada says, love me, love my dog. Right. So that's what's being brought by here. Another thing that just struck me was in just the grammatical aspect is that you have artha, because that's what we're talking about, gain, right? So you have the purushartas, dharma, artha, kama, moksha, and they're all considered goals, but then the ultimate goal is bhakti, That's the panchama purusharta, the fifth goal. So now anartha means it's against artha, right? It's not artha, right? When you have an anartha, it means that's an obstacle to getting artha. But now it means you can say an anartha could be anything that stops, you know, you're too lazy so you didn't get all the ingredients for the yajna, or, you know, you're a little too miserly so you don't pay the priests enough and so therefore you don't get the full benefit, or, you know, you're not careful in serving the prasad and so the devotees aren't pleased. So these can all be like that. So they're getting in the way of dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. Right? Does that make sense? You know, you're too self-centered, so therefore your kama is not working right. You're too impatient, or you're too, what do you call it? You have thrift-worthy. What is it when you spendthrift? Yeah, the other way around. Okay, you just spend money, then your artha is not going to happen. Or you're too just focused on material things, so your moksha is not going to happen. Right? But we know from our discussions, these anarthas we're taking is in getting in the way of devotional service. Right? So therefore we can see the ultimate goal is devotional service, not any of these other four. Does that make some sense? Okay. Page 3 on the second, the second main paragraph. Bhagavatam 1.1.2 anticipates direct association between Parama Nimatsaranam Satam, elevated devotees whose hearts are so pure that they are in no way tainted with envy, and the Kribihi, pious persons willing to hear Bhagavat Tattva. The Kribihi are fortunate to have their ears and hearts transcendentally purified and nourished by the medicinal message of the Bhagavata. At the same time, this is a message that, for the devotee, Bhagavat himself is sheer nectar. The pure devotee has no need to be dosed with regular Bhagavata classes in order that his spiritual health be maintained. Instead, he bathes his consciousness constantly in the ecstatic nectar of the pure vibration that transmits Sri Krishna's instructions, descriptions, relationships, pastimes, and even his most deeply hidden purest of secrets, Raja Guhyam Pavitram. Srila Prabhupada explained the process of genuine Bhagavata or Krishna Katha in a lecture he gave on 28 December 1973 in Los Angeles. Quote, Bhagavatam means Bhagavata. Bhagavata means the Supreme Lord, and Bhagavatam means about him or about his devotees. That is Bhagavata. Because a devotee is called Bhagavata, this book Bhagavata, and a devotee is person Bhagavata. So according to our Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's cult, the Bhagavata should be studied from the person Bhagavata, not from the professional reciters. No. Therefore, Srupa Goswami, 1. Because when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was present at Jagannath Puri, many people used to come, present so many literatures, so many commentaries. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu will not hear them unless it is passed by his secretary, Srupa Damodar. First of all, Srupa Damodar Goswami will see whether it is written properly according to Siddhanta. Then he will allow. That was the business. So one Brahmana came. So there was many discrepancies in his business. So when Brahmana came, so there were many discrepancies in his writing. So Srupa Damodar chastised him that, quote, you do not know how to write. Why you have attempted this? So he said, Bhagavat paro gya bhagavata sthane. If you want to know about Bhagavata, Srimad Bhagavatam, then you study Srimad Bhagavatam from a person Bhagavatam, whose life is Bhagavatam. From such a person, if you read, if you understand Bhagavata, then you will benefit. It is not a scholarship, because you know that is not the qualification. Bhagavata should be studied from the person whose life is Bhagavata. This is the instruction of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's personal secretary. Okay, so It's not scholarship, so it should be very. It's very important to note that in here, you know, there's some scholarship as elements are there, as Sahotraji pointed out yesterday, that the second canto will be more scholarship. It's kind of like it technically lays the foundation for the whole Bhagavatam. So all points throughout the whole work are contained in the second chapter. I mean, second canto, because it's the opening, right? That's where Parikkhit and Sukadev Goswami speak. The first canto is Sutta and the Sages in Naimisharanya. And that's like leading up to the opening in the Bhagavatam. Though, because it's about that conversation, it also becomes part of the conversation. Does that make sense? So, it'll be more technical, but more technical simply means trying to understand it from many more different angles, more subtle understanding, so that we can more nicely apply it in our life. Does that make sense? Right? In other words, if we really think about it, do we take the philosophy in everything we do in our life, do we take that philosophy down to that point? If we do, great. Then this will be easy for you. If we don't, then this gives an opportunity to see methods or means how we can do that. Does that make sense? So it's not actually scholarship. It's very important that that's not the purpose of this. It may be very technical, there may be a lot of study, but its purpose is not to make scholars. It's the last thing we want to create from the academy is scholars. Right? Here we meaning scholars means they're academically very astute and qualified. And that's all. That's a scholar. A devotee is also a scholar, meaning along with all the other 25 qualities, he also is a scholar. You understand? Means he can discuss and illuminate the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. Right? But it's not that is important for him. Right? A scholar likes scholarly language, likes technical points, doesn't like things to be too simple. Right? A scholar doesn't like it that you could take his whole topic and condense it into one sentence. They do not like that. Number one mistake to make with an academic is reduce it down to one sentence and say that that's it. And it means there's a good chance you're going to have a lot of problem. A few will accept that, but most don't. They like the whole mental gymnastics. That's a scholar. A scholar means he's attached to the mental gymnastics, a very technical, intellectual thought. Right? Does that make some sense? So, that's not what we're looking for. We're looking for people who are intelligent, who are qualified, and according to their particular own personal ability, then they can take the philosophy more or less. That's why you'll see is in the discussions here, the emphasis on the study is understanding what's going on and how to apply it. It's not so much memorizing verses or you know all this and that. That's nice. If you have that kind of memory, that will come easy for you. If you don't have that kind of memory, then what's the use of saying that you know X amount of verses, therefore you know Bhagavatam? You know what I'm saying? Because it'll be a problem for you. You'll be too worried about the verses. You won't be worried about the Bhagavatam. So the message of the Bhagavatam, that's what we're trying to get across. And that we can practically apply it in our life. You can do that, you can apply it in others' lives. Right? If you can do something, it's easy to show someone else. So if you ever had thought, I have trouble preaching, convincing someone, that means then those areas we ourselves are not necessarily convinced about. We may be intellectually, but are we practically? Right? And if we just look at that, then we will see, and we look, and then we'll cultivate that, then it'll be very easy to convince somebody of that. Right? You like something, it's easy to convince somebody else that it's Right? If you intellectually say, oh, this is better than that, oh, who's going to, you know, potato is king of vegetables, Prabhupada said. Nice, but, you know, someone may have so many arguments. But it's, I like potatoes, they're so nice, you can do so many things with them. You know, you can steam them, you can bake them, you can boil them, you can fry them. You know, you can do anything you want with them. It's such a great potato. Then immediately you're thinking, hey, well, what is this potato? I never really thought about it like that. You know? Does that make sense? So, that's the point. When you're convinced, others will be convinced. So, bottom of the page. Bhagavatam is further glorified. Jai ho, jai ho. It's further glorified in the second Mangalacharan verse.
I'm sorry.
No problem.
It's one of those things, you know, you start doing something that you think is going to just take a few minutes, you know.
3 days later.
Yeah. Make your books clean. Yeah. Room.
I was seeing you're very well prepared for class today with that stack of books. So.
This I have to give to someone.
I thought you were going to quote from each of books today and make sure that everybody. Okay. Oh, one more thing.
Yeah, this is my Japanese language.
Oh, okay. Yeah. You're going to learn a little Japanese also in this whole. exercise. Not today. Okay. Bottom of page 3.
Okay.
Bhagavatam is further glorified in the second Mangalacharan verse because Vedyam Vastavam Atra Vastu Shivaram Tapa Trayon Mulanam. It makes the Vastu Shivaram, the auspicious substance of reality, that is the true subject matter of Vedic literature. It makes the Vastu realizable. Okay. It means you can realize the auspiciousness of. You perform devotional service. We're saying it's auspicious, but you realize it's auspicious by operating. It's not just we say. That's the nice thing about our philosophy. Everything you can actually test. And in fact, you're supposed to. You're supposed to check it. But with an open mind, not doubting. Right? That's Krishna's first point in the Bhagavad Gita. And Prabhupada makes that in the introduction to the Gita. Says, you want to understand Gita, first just approach it that it's right. And then try to understand it. Then after approaching it that way, and understanding it, if you don't like it, then throw it out. But don't come in and doubting the conversation or the subject matter itself. So, devotees, that's the difference between the modern academy and the Vedic academy. Is that the modern academy, critical thinking means I start off doubting everything except my own intelligence. Of course, my own intelligence is the supreme, but everything else I doubt.
Doesn't exist.
It doesn't exist, yes. Like that. Yes, it's seen through the portal of my intelligence. Like that. Portal meaning the vegetable, of course. So then, like that.
Well, let's mix it here.
Okay, we won't. So, but the Vedic Academy is, we're open-minded. We don't doubt, but we want to know why. Right? That's the Atato Brahma Jigyasa. Human life starts with why. Right? So, therefore, just on a side thing, just for, you know, the parents of the world, when your kid starts asking why about everything, it's a good thing. It's a symptom of human life. And if you can cultivate that by explaining why it is and giving good answers, and if you don't know, find out, educate yourself, then you'll make a nice human being. But if you shut them down and saying, don't ask so many questions, you know, mommy's busy, daddy's busy, then you kind of like cull their human instinct, and then you get the modern adolescent, which doesn't ask why, and it's only interested in hedonistic, you know, stupidity.
Hormonal activity.
Yes. Yes. Right? You understand? So it's actually, that's the thing, is you should ask why, please.
A point you just made, Maharaj just made about the parents. Some of the our adults here are parents of children in the school, and actually I would This is sort of not really a philosophical point, but I want to tell you about a more practical reasoning behind this course. Is that we're holding it 4 times a week, as we did last year, and we're particularly inviting the parents, one or two, you know, come together, or at least father, mother, come to this class. If you can't come 4 times a week, come 3, 2, but try to come to this class, because if you do, that's going to solve so many of these, what usually turns out to be insignificant little trip-ups that happen between parents and school authorities. By coming to this class, it's not, of course, you're going to hear this nice philosophy, but you're going to get to know Maharaj. Maharaj, you know, is sometimes, I hate to say this, but sometimes one hears the whispered complaint that he's unavailable. Now, I'm not going to get into the reason why, but there is a definite, very good reason why Maharaj doesn't make himself so available to talk to anybody and everybody, and it's a reason why that has been in existence for more than a decade. So, but here's your chance. If you come here and attend the class, then you're hearing Maharaj, you're developing a relationship with him and with me. Of course, I'm not really the type of person that's very worthwhile to develop a relationship. I actually don't like human relationships very much, to be quite honest.
I'm, another
I like being in my my gufa over there, just typing and reading. And
one of the Atmaramas Lord Chaitanya talks about.
Whatever. I would prefer the term hermit. I have a very pronounced hermit nature. But you don't need to know me, because I'm not actually a teacher of the children here. But Maharaj is. He's a teacher, and the principal of the school, Priti Vardhana, and Lagish Prabhu, who is the other leading teacher, they're his disciples. So by coming, you develop your relationship with Maharaj. You'll be able to approach him. You'll be able to set up appointments with him and speak with him about things that need to be spoken about. But the thing is, by regular attendance, your own understanding of what is important to talk about and what is not important to talk about will be sharpened. So Maharaj will be much more agreeable to meet and discuss. I mean, when Maharaj starts, I think you may see from these classes, when he starts talking about things, he can go on for hours and hours, and you can have, all of you can have such relationship with Maharaj. If you become regular attendees of this class. So that is an important aspect of why we're holding this class. It's of course for our own, for the boys here to start learning Bhagavatam. It's for the adult, this is actually an adult education course for adults who want to go very, very, very deep into the subject matter. But also it is our, you might say, well, to use the ISKCON jargon, it's our communications effort, you know, as there's a department called ISKCON Communications. So this is our Bhaktivedanta Rupanuga Vidyapit.
Paramartika.
You see, that's why I'm useless. I don't know any of this jargon. All I know is how to prepare.
And Prabhupada's given both.
Yeah, okay.
All both right. Names.
So I got it right. Half the time. So anyway, this is your entrance into a closer relationship with the school. And especially if you've got a student, if you've got a child in this school,
than rather sitting back at the Gahastapara worrying, you know, what is my kid learning there? And people talk, and I hear it's all useless, that, you know, Vedic education is irrelevant anyway and obsolete, and you know, they're all weirdos over there, and they're just going to raise my kid to be another weirdo. And, you know, instead of worrying about these things, if you come to this class, you'll, just from the class alone, a lot of those doubts will be cleared away, but you'll also be able to have with Maharaj's kind permission, agreement to what I'm saying. I didn't ask you if I could say this the way. We did talk about it a while ago. I hope you remember we had this conversation.
was that the 84?
No. Not long ago, and I talked about it also with Preeti Bhatt, and said it was a great idea. So I just wanted to bring this up, that to take full advantage of this class is also means to, we were talking about opening doorways, so this opens the doorway to a more intimate connection with the school, the way we do things. I mean, if we see you here 4 days a week listening to it, you have to look at it from our side. If we see you here, a parent, coming 4 days a week, listening attentively, we are going to be much more inclined to take what you have to say seriously. You know, because, I mean, quite frankly, but there is a significant percentage of issues that parents raise, you know, about the education of their children, which are really born out of what we call raga, but not in the transcendental sense, attachment, you know. And attachment tends to cloud the intelligence, and that means that the things we end up talking about are not really, you can't really talk about them because they're not on the platform of logic, actually. They're more on the platform of just what Prabhupada would call skin disease, you know. So, and that's why some of the parents of our children, they have gone so far sometimes to take their children out of the program, remove them from the school, because they complain that they can't find a way to have a relationship with the staff, because some of our staff members, and now I'm not referring actually to Maharaj, I'm thinking of some others, you know, they just, you know, they're so busy, they have so many things to do, so it's just hard to find time to sit down with someone who's just pouring out all of their anxieties about rumors they've heard, untrue stories, gossip, blah, blah, blah. You know, we would like to clear away all your fears, but let's learn to do it on a logical platform. Let's learn to do it on a platform of love and trust. Let's do it on a platform of actually knowing one another. And this is the perfect way to do that, you know, if we just attend this class. So, sermon ended. Please continue, Maharaj.
It's also probably not a well understood position that actually the academy is, let's say, the Vedic concept of education is adult. In the Vedas, there's no such thing as education that's specifically for kids. It doesn't exist, right? Because the world is a world of adults, right? They run the world, they manage it, they do everything, not the kids.
Well, the kids make trouble.
That's fair, of course.
And a lot of noise, especially on Wednesdays.
No, you said this wasn't a political statement.
It's not political.
Oh, okay.
It's psychological.
Oh, okay. As in torture?
Well, as I said, I'm not a teacher of the, you know, if you think I just showed evidence of psychological manipulation of children, rest assured, I don't teach the children. I have nothing to do with with that aspect of the school whatsoever, except just to say hello, you know, right? Isn't that true?
It is true, right?
See, I'm
I'll see you after class. Okay, so the Vedic concept that there is, the education is real. This is vastu. It's substance. But there are methods to teach it to kids. You understand? In the modern education, you have education that's just for kids. You teach them stuff that's absolutely useless. Right? You know, it's just like, we have so many nice songs. You could teach kids songs, right? But the West has generated a genre of songs that have absolutely no purpose other than singing to kids. And the kids, when they grow up, they sing them to their kids. I mean, it works, but you know what I'm saying? All these you know.
Lullabies?
Yeah, lullabies, all these other things. There's some, you know, and then.
Ring Around the Rosie.
Yeah. Pocket Full of Tulsi, you know, like that, you know, so, like this.
Yeah. Hey, here's a thinker.
What did he say?
He just, when we said that, he turned
around. Oh, and we all bowed down.
Something about Tulsi, you know, yeah. The Tulsi song. That's the real song.
Pocket Full of Tulsi, yeah. We all bowed down.
That's
right?
The real song.
Okay. How do you go?
Bring around the plant. We do raise philosophical.
Yes, see, okay. Okay, so there's certain things and that the concept is kids aren't very smart, right? Because, as we mentioned before, is the scholar has to think, I am special and I can understand it, therefore somebody inferior, what makes me superior is someone can't understand it, therefore the inferior. Therefore anybody in educational circles lower than me has to be less intelligent.
He's talking about me.
Oh, well, whatever. So, does that make some sense?
It's
a premise that you have to go on. It's just like Darwin's theory, you know. It's just everything's evolving and getting better rather than it's going the opposite. So, in the Vedic, that's not how it works. It's that the knowledge itself, everything taught to the child must be useful to him as an adult. Right, so it's divided up into three stages. Is that basically up to the age of, let's say, 10, but stretch it to 12, the memory is fabulous, way better than any adult can ever, you know, hope for, like that. So therefore, that's why when they're young, they memorize things by rote. Because anything you want the kid to memorize, any verses, any ritual, anything, you memorize it, then you have it for life. Right? So that aspect of adult education is taken and given to them. That's the emphasis. Then, from 13 to 15, that's the time for skills. Because something must happen, it must be dynamic. They don't have a great attention span, they don't have much focus, they have very little sensitivity, so if it's not happening, it's not happening. Right? So that's when all the skills can be given. Right? They'll do anything, learn anything new. You don't have the problem of the adult ego getting in the way that, oh, if I do it wrong, then it'll never happen, and I can't try, I can't risk doing it wrong and failing. No, they'll just keep doing it until they got it. Right? You know, it's like we'll sit there in the computer and, well, okay, this and that. The kid just comes up and is like this and that. Oh, you just do that. And, you know, it's just, they don't mind making a mistake and learning. Then from 16, then they're adults, so they can think like one. Therefore, then the philosophy becomes the main focus. Right?
In other words, this is another form of sambandha vidya.
Yeah, prayojana. Exactly. Yeah, it's just another form. So all the sambandha aspects are giving to the kids. So if you ever wonder, oh, is it learning by rote or is it by intellectualizing and all that? The thing is Vedic education is both, but each has its place. You know, everything has its place. So all the sambandha is learned when they're young, the abhideya in the middle, and the prayojana when they're older. Right?
And just to make a quick insert, Maharaj was explaining the word academy. So, academy, etymologically speaking, it means tracing back the origin of the word. I believe academy is coming from directly into English from Latin, but it is a translation into Latin of the original Greek word Lyceum, or probably pronounced it Lyceum. I think the Greeks, that C would be pronounced as a K, Lyceum. And so the academy, the famous academy of ancient Athens, was founded by Plato, who is considered in the West the foremost philosopher of history. A.M. Whitehead is a British intellectual philosopher himself of the 20th century, a very good friend of, you may, probably more likely you've heard of Bertrand Russell. One of outstanding thinkers. So one of his close friends was an equally, in England anyway, famous A.N. Whitehead, and he made the remark that all Western philosophy simply consists of footnotes to Plato. In other words, Western philosophy means Plato. And Plato talked about a monotheistic, sort of semi-personal deity in whom truth and beauty were manifest in full perfection. And everything else, you know, the material world is simply a perverted reflection of the truth and beauty of that absolute being. And that we are all eternal souls going through what the Greeks called metempsychosis, which translates into Latin and then into English as reincarnation. So you can understand the sort of philosophy that was being taught at the original Lyceum or academy. Mm-hmm. And this academy was actually in the forest. They used to keep their students living in the forest. Mm. So they live a simple life. Mm-hmm. They'd have to gather firewood and all of that. Mm-hmm. It's very much like we read about the original Vedic Gurukul system that was maintained by Vishishta Muni or other great rishis. So this is actually the etymological history of the word academy. Mm-hmm. It doesn't translate into kindergarten. Academy actually means a place where philosophy is very seriously studied. Mm-hmm. You see, for many, many years. I mean, these persons would come into the academy at a young age. Plato would have students, boy students, and they would stay until their 20s, 30s. Sometimes they would just stay. Mm-hmm. Because Plato had so much to say. Mm-hmm. But at least until their 20s, 30s, they would stay and just... Because it used to be in European education, all universities were centered around... The philosophy was considered the subject matter, and history and math and all these other things were just footnotes to philosophy. Mm-hmm. Just like all Western philosophy is footnotes to Plato. Mm-hmm. So all other subject matters were footnotes to philosophy. So here we're trying to have such an academy in the real sense. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Please continue. You've got, what, 4 minutes?
Yeah, let's just finish this. Top of four. The proof of such transcendental realization being the mitigation of the threefold miseries of material life. The Bhagavatam is composed by none less than Godhead himself in his literary incarnation as Srila Vyasadeva at the mature height of his spiritual wisdom. The second verse encourages humanity to take up hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, boldly declaring that it alone obviates all other Vedic literature. This verse is clearly the Abhideya feature of the Mangalacharan. So here, obviates means that it's not that others aren't important, it's just whatever the others have to say is already included in the Bhagavatam. But as we said, as we noted when we're in teaching, that the memorization of things is considered lower than the skill of it, which is considered lower than the actual realization of it. Right? It means, in other words, operating it and having intellectual understanding is great, but realizing it and actually becoming part of your life, that's more important.
Right? So that's what's considered here by the term mature. Mature meaning vigyan. Right? The others are written in the platform of gyan. But after meeting Narad Muni, and then he composed Srimad Bhagavatam in his maturity, in his realization. So, therefore, there's no problem in going to other Vedic literatures for certain technical points and details and that, but it must always be seen through the perspective of the Bhagavatam. Maharaj came up with a very nice term the other day, but and says it. What does that mean? I say hermeneutics, but what did you say?
Hermeneutics.
Which basically means your the law of interpretation. How you would the perspective you would take to interpret a point.
This will all be explained in the second canon study guide, by the way.
Yeah. So it's just
we call it Krishnoitics there.
Krishnoitics.
Okay. You'll find out why.
There's a band named that, right?
What?
There is Krishnoitics. So that means is that something can have any perspective you could look at it. Right? We look at this building. Okay, we want to look at this for living. Okay, okay, no walls. Maybe not the ideal. We're looking at it for, okay, let us say making a fortress and, you know, fighting off, you know, some local army, then maybe also a little too open, but bricks, so it's got some potential. We're looking for a place which light and airy for having classes. Okay, you understand? So you could take it from any angle. So which one you take it from, that's what's important. That's given by our acharyas. So that's what's given in Bhagavatam. Means all other Vedic literatures can be consulted as long as they're consulted from the perspective of Srimad Bhagavatam as given to us by our acharyas. That means then you can look at anything, it's not a problem. But if you don't do that, it's a problem, because then you develop the particular, Hindu weakness of they have too many perspectives, so they don't actually have a consistent philosophy. Right? In the Vedas, there's basically only one culture, the Brahminical culture. So all followers of the Vedas will relate to each other on that. You can go to any Hindu's house everywhere. The way they serve prasad, the mood that they do it in, the cleanliness, the stand, is all the same. Maybe the preparation, order of preparation, that's different. But everything else, the culture is the same, how they'll greet you, how they'll take care, it's all the same, because there's only one Vedic culture. But philosophy, that, there's unlimited perspectives. So that you need to have the perspective given by the teacher. And so, of all the perspectives, Bhagavatam's the highest. And of that, as Marv's explaining the other day, then you have the Achintabheda-Veda Tattva. And that's the supreme viewpoint of the whole cosmic creation. Because that is Braja Krishna's view. Right? Which means it's Braja Radharani's view. Which means it's Lord Chaitanya's view, which means it's Rupa Goswami's view, means it's Srila Prabhupada's view. Right? So, that's, you take that, anything, material, spiritual, can be viewed, and it's not a problem. That is Yukta Vairagya, when it's engaged. Right? That's a Chintaveda-Veda Tattva. You can see how it functions. You can apply it. Because the perspective is exact, then there's no worry like that.
Yeah. We're just past 9. Could we just read the next paragraph, because that'll finish up the Mangalacharan?
Oh, okay. Verse 3 closes the Mangalacharan by describing the prayojana achieved by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. Pivata Bhagavatam rasamalayam muhuraho rasika bhuyubhavuka. This particularly applies to hearers who are already liberated souls, as was the speaker, Srila Sukadeva Goswami.
And I should have also added there, and the hearer or disciple, Maharaj Parikshit, he was also a liberated soul.
Yeah, yeah.
But he wasn't taking the position of a liberated soul
uh-huh.
in this initial exchange. Mm-hmm. So I guess that's why I mentioned only Shukadeva. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But he himself started off as a hearer.
Yeah.
Hearing within the womb.
Yeah, that's true.
He was already Brahman realized, and yet he was attracted. Brahman means you're neutral to everything, but he was attracted by the message of Krishna in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and therefore he took birth, which means therefore he began to interact with the Lord's material energy. Mm. Now knowing how to interact with it properly, mm. because the Brahmavadi, he doesn't know how to relate to it, so he just avoids it.
Because it's Maya.
Yeah, okay.
He so actually doesn't know what it is. Yeah.
So he just thought, just stay within the womb. Then I don't have to do anything for 16 years.
Mm-hmm. You didn't get a free ride.
I don't, yeah. I think his mother found that giving him a free ride rather. So yeah, as your little boy inside your womb.
Well, she just, you know, she kind of like, hey, you got to go talk to Krishna about this one. Okay, so then.
So thank you very much for coming, and then tomorrow we will be again with verse 4. That's actually entering the. Oh yeah, not tomorrow.
Excuse me, Thursday.
Please, if anyone has one of these and has not paid fees, you have to give it back. As I explained yesterday, you can only have one of these study guides if you're going to enroll as a student. So if you've got one and you're intending on leaving, we do not permit you to take this away. So there's a... I warn you that at the end of the walkway there, there's what's called in Sanskrit a golaksha, a cyclops with a big club in his hand waiting to see if any unauthorized person is going to walk off with one study guide.
Srila Prabhupada ki.